First, though, to Syria and the story of a young man named Kerem al-Hamad. Reporter Marine Olivezi brings us his story of getting caught between the regime he hated and the Islamic radicals he feared.
I first met Kerem in May 2013 in the battered city of Deir Zor. He helped me out as a translator, guide, protector. We became friends and stayed in touch. On Sunday, Kerem, now in Turkey, called me up with good news. He had been accepted for fellowship in the U.S. at Syracuse University's Maxwell School of Public Affairs. He had just picked up his visa and was booked on a flight to New York the next day.
This country is only for United States flights. Everyone in here is for United States.
Monday morning, we meet up at the airport.
So how are you feeling?
I didn't sleep, actually.
Kerem's anxious, for good reason. Turkey is the only foreign country he's visited. He's barely been on a plane. But those concerns are the least of his troubles.
Are you sure you don't have any travel documents with you?
No.
This is the ID. Your passport or something else?
No.
Anything?
I have only the Syrian ID also.
Kerem has got no passport. The U.S. consulate delivered his visa on a piece of paper from the State Department and told him he was good to go. But the immigration officers here don't know what to do with him.
So I need to ask police?
Yeah.
Because they are making passport control.
Okay.
Okay.
Excellent.
The answer came fast.
Show the passport. Okay, no passport, no flight.
No passport, no flight. For about an hour, Kerem barely says a word. The blow is hard to stomach. Passport seemed like his curse. Trying to get one landed him in jail. Kerem was 20 when protests against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad broke out in 2011. Some of his friends took up arms and joined the Free Syrian Army. Kerem picked up his camera and started documenting the war. In 2013, he ran Deir Zor's media center. That's how we met. The town was split between the rubble and regime-controlled sides of town. He worked on the rubble side. His parents lived on the regime side. Every now and again, he would sneak there to visit them. In August 2013, he went again on a mission. Kerem never had a passport, but needed one to travel to Turkey for work. One of his relatives on the regime side told him he could arrange it. Kerem trusted him and fell into a trap. Regime forces took him, then went to his house. Kerem's younger brother was there.
They barged in and they just searched the house. And they were looking for computers and hard drives and
mobile phones.
Then they said, wear some clothes and come with us.
For a month, the two brothers were separated, interrogated, beaten up, and interrogated again. At first, Kerem didn't know what the investigators knew exactly about him. After a couple of weeks, he found out he and his brother were on a list of 17 names that were given by one of their high school friends. The charge against them? Working with the Mossad, Israel's spy agency. For Kerem, the accusation was ludicrous, but it was a blessing because they had no record of him as an activist. The investigator asked for names of his Israeli network.
I told him, Iker Casillas.
Iker Casillas is a player for Real Madrid.
When he wrote Iker Casillas, I told him, Wesley Schneider.
And that's another Wesley, player, a football he's, player?
Yeah, he heard the shh. So he thought that he was Jewish. He kept writing. So I kept giving him some names.
And that, crazily enough, did the trick. Kerem says the investigators were jubilant, as if they'd cracked some big case. They sent him and his brother to Damascus. Interrogation sessions weren't as rough as in Deir Zor, but Kerem says the real torture there was detention itself. He and his brother were crammed in with 120 people in a single room that also included the bathroom. 73 of their roommates died. Kerem remembers one old man having a heart attack in the middle of the night.
He was going to die, so maybe at 2 or 3 a.m. I was knocking on the door, calling the guards to come and get him out. After an hour or more, he came and he said, once his breath and dies, call me again and let him go out with the rubbish.
Hiding early for the daily races, going nowhere.
It's a mad world.
The teacher tells me
The brothers say they'd hum that song whenever they felt they were about to lose it. They didn't know it then, but their mother had moved to Damascus and was showing up in court every day, hoping to hear from them. She was there when the judge finally dropped all charges, in June last year, almost 11 months after their arrest. Kerem moved to Turkey in the fall, snuck across the border like tens of thousands of other refugees. He's been working here with Syrian dissidents, but says he feels mostly powerless to change anything back home. And he's still scarred by his time in jail. Going to the US, he hopes, might help him move on.
You might laugh, but it would be something like psychological treatment for me after being out of jail. I'm still shy, I'm still having bad dreams. I don't want to miss it. I hope I won't.
Kerem has spent this past week working the phones to get some sort of passport waiver. He's not entirely sure how it'll go, but he's booked on a flight today. Wish him luck. For The World, I'm Marine Olivesi in Istanbul.